expansive he was, and expensive. A Hogarth cartoon of a man, enormous of girth, many-chinned and broad-stomached. He was over 60. His hair was grey and silver, and it was cut too long in the back because it made people uncomfortable that his hair was too long, and Mr. Stockton liked making people uncomfortable. Compared to Arnold Stockton, Rupert Murdoch was a shady little piker, and the late Robert Maxwell was a beached whale. Arnold Stockton was a pit bull, which was how caricaturists often chose to draw him. Stockton's owned a little bit of everything. Satellites, newspapers, record companies, amusement parks, books, magazines, comics, television stations, film companies.
"I'll make the speech now," said Mr. Stockton to Jessica, by way of introduction. "Then I'll bugger off. Come back some other time when there aren't all these stuffed shirts about."
"Right," said Jessica. "Yes, the speech now. Of course." And she led him up onto the little stage, up to the podium. She tinked her fingernail against a glass for silence. Nobody heard her, so she said, "Excuse me," into the microphone. This time the conversation quieted. "Ladies and gentlemen, honoured guests, I'd like to welcome all of you to the British Museum," she said, "to the Stockton-sponsored exhibition Angels Over England, and to the man behind it all, our Chief Executive and Chairman of the Board, Mr. Arnold Stockton." The guests applauded, none of them in any doubt as to who had assembled the collection of angels, nor for that matter, who paid for their champagne. Mr. Stockton cleared his throat.
"Right," he said, "this won't take long. When I was a small boy, I used to come to the British Museum on Saturdays, because it was free, and we didn't have much money. But I'd come up the big steps to the museum, and I'd come down to this room round the back, and look up at this angel. It was like it knew what I was thinking."
Just at that moment, Clarence came back in, a couple of security guards beside him. He pointed to Richard, who had stopped to listen to Mr. Stockton's speech. Dorr was still examining exhibits. "No, him," Clarence kept saying to the guards in an undertone. "No, a look, just there. Yes, him."
"Anyway, like anything that's not looked after," continued Mr. Stockton, "it decayed. Fell apart under the stresses and strains of modern times. Went rotten. Went bad. Well, it's taken a shitload of money."
He paused to let it sink in. If he, Arnold Stockton, thought it was a shitload, then a shitload it certainly was.
"And a dozen craftsmen have spent a great deal of time restoring it and fixing it up. After this, the exhibition will be going to America and then around the world. So maybe it can inspire some other little penniless bugger to start his own communications empire."
He turned around, turned to Jessica, muttered,
"What do I do now?"
She pointed to the pull rope at the side of the curtain. Mr. Stockton pulled the rope. The curtain billowed and opened, revealing an old door behind it. Again, there was a small flurry of activity in Clarence's corner of the room.
"No, him," said Clarence. "For heaven's sake, are you blind?"
It looked like it had once been the door to a cathedral. It was the height of two men, and wide enough for a pony to walk through. Carved into the wood of the door and painted with red and white and gold leaf was an extraordinary angel. It stared out at the world with blank medieval eyes. There was an impressed gasp from the guests. Then they began to applaud.
"The Angelus!"
Dorr tugged at Richard's sleeve.
"That's it! Richard, come on!"
She ran for the stage.
"Excuse me, sir," said a guard to Richard.
"Might we see your invitation?"
said another, taking Richard firmly but discreetly by the arm. "And do you have any identification?"
No, said Richard.
Dorr was up on the stage. Richard tried to yank free and follow her, hoping that the guards would forget about him. They didn't.
Now that he had been brought to their attention, they were going to proceed to treat him as they might any other shabby, unwashed, somewhat unshaven gatecrasher. The guard who was holding Richard increased his grip on his arm, muttering, "None of that." Dor paused on the stage, wondering how to make the guards let Richard go. Then she did the only thing she could think of. She went over to the microphone, went up on tiptoes, and she screamed as loud as she possibly could into the public address system. She had a remarkable scream. It could, with no artificial assistance, go through your head like a new power drill with a bone saw attachment. And amplified, it was simply unearthly. A waitress dropped her tray of drinks. Heads turned, hands covered ears. All conversation stopped. People stared at the stage in puzzlement and horror, and Richard made a break for it. "Sorry," he said to the stunned guard, as he yanked his arm out of the man's grip and fled. "Wrong London!" He reached the stage, grabbed Dor's outstretched left hand. Her right hand touched the Angelus, the enormous cathedral door. Touched it and opened it. This time, no one dropped any drinks. They were frozen, staring, utterly overwhelmed and momentarily blinded. The Angelus had opened. And light from behind the door had flooded the room with radiance. People covered their eyes, then hesitantly opened them again and simply stared. It was as if fireworks had been let off in the room, not indoor fireworks, strange crawling things that sputter and smell bad, nor even the kind of fireworks that you let off in your back garden. But the kind of industrial-strength fireworks that get fired up high enough to cause a potential menace to the airways, the kind of fireworks that end a day at Walt Disney World or that give the fire marshals headaches at Pink Floyd concerts. It was a moment of pure magic. The audience stared, entranced and amazed. The only noise to be heard was the gentle, gasping, almost groan of wonderment people make when they watch fireworks. The sound of awe. Then a grubby young man and a smut-faced girl in a huge leather jacket walked into the light show and vanished. The door closed behind them. The light show was over. And everything was normal again. The guests and guards and serving staff blinked, shook their respective heads, and having dealt with something entirely outside of their experience, agreed, somehow without a word, that it had simply never happened. The string quartet began to play once more. Mr. Stockton walked off, nodding brusquely to various acquaintances as he did so. Jessica walked over to Clarence. "What?" she asked quietly, "are those security guards doing in here?" The guards in question were standing amongst the guests, looking around as if they were themselves unsure what they were doing there. Clarence began to explain just what the guards were doing there, and then he realized that he had absolutely no idea. "I'll deal with it," said Clarence, efficiently. Jessica nodded. She looked out over her party and smiled benignly. It was all going rather well.